Some years ago, I was introduced to a number of terrific books written by my next guest. He is a physician and investor who has written a book describing the special decision-making of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, all within light of understanding that human behavior needs some reforming when it comes to making good investment decisions. So creating checklists and parameters within which to work goes a long distance in helping us. And my next guest has done that very well. His name is Bud Labatan. And as a matter of fact, I used his books as the source of my talk at the Money Show in Orlando recently. Welcome to the show, Bud.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
One of the books I want to discuss today is the Four Filters Invention. Describe what those four filters are.
Sure. The four filters, let me give you just a little bit of background. I became interested in their decision-making process, and I came across a phrase that Mr. Buffett uses in a couple different ways. He says, we look for a business that we can understand. So that's number one, and he means economic understanding. Number two, a business that has a sustainable competitive advantage. And sometimes he uses the words durable competitive advantage. And he wants them with able and trustworthy managers. So that's filter number three. And finally is Ben Graham's margin of safety, which is purchasing at a bargain price.
They sound so simple on the face of it, but let's delve underneath each one and see what they really mean. So once again, the first filter is basically understanding what you own. Tell us about that.
Yes. Understanding what you own was also influenced by his partner, Mr. Charlie Munger, who's now about 92 or 93 years old. Mm-hmm. But Charlie Munger has always said, let's look at a business like a latticework of mental models, and let's collect mental facts about each business, and then let's take a look at it and see if it's a first-class business and whether it can endure economic storms.
Well, what is a latticework of mental models?
A latticework of mental models is something like building your experience just by looking at numerous businesses. And your audience will appreciate the fact that as we go through our lives over time, we start to get a sense of which businesses are good and can endure. And as we get a little bit older, we can see businesses that have gone under and failed. So little by little, we build up our latticework of mental models every day.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, we operate in a world full of big companies and brand names and smaller companies with good products or bad products. And we start to get a feel for what the true kind of underpinning story is behind a particular company. Now, did Buffett and Munger invest in small companies, or were they mostly interested in buying established companies?
Well, the answer to that question is, in my view, is that they have evolved over time. You may be familiar with some of their early purchases way back when they bought a department store. Mm-hmm. In fact, Berkshire Hathaway was a textile business that was slowly losing business to Southern manufacturers and overseas textile manufacturers. But at the time they purchased it, it was still producing free cash. Mm-hmm. And so at that moment in time, it was kind of a cash cow. But over time, competition diminished that business. Luckily, they transferred some of their funds into insurance companies and other fine businesses.
And they were able to manage that money. Also, if I remember, he bought a map company way back when that was important stuff to do. But the thing about that map company is it had a lot of stocks on its balance sheet, and
yes,
he liked the stock portfolio and the map company. It wasn't that important. So understanding a company is paramount importance. What is the second filter that you believe that Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger use?
The second filter is sustainable competitive advantage, and sometimes he'll label it durable competitive advantage. Basically, that means he wants a business that has an economic moat or some type of protection around that company so that it's difficult for other businesses to get into that line of business.
Well, business is competitive, and it's the nature of capitalism for competitive. As a matter of fact, the more successful a business is, the more people want to compete in that business because there's a lot of money to be made. And that dilutes the competitiveness of a particular business. So the Buffett method is to try to find businesses that are protected from competition. That sounds easy, but I think that's a pretty hard thing to do. What do you think?
Yes, that's something that you kind of build with experience, and you look for brands or brand identity because that means customer loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And also, having a sustainable competitive advantage means that you have repeat customers and they develop a loyalty like Coca-Cola and Gillette and some of the other brands. I think most recently they acquired the Duracell unit from Procter & Gamble.
Right. That makes sense. I mean, the Gillette model is basically you give away the razor for free, but you're continuing to have to buy the blades all the time. That's a wonderful business. But you know what always struck me was that Coca-Cola seems like a business that would not be able to create and maintain a durable competitive advantage. How have they been able to do that?
The amazing thing about Coca-Cola is that if you look at the numbers of Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, Coca-Cola, which has been around over 110 years, has built a worldwide distribution system and a cost advantage. So if you look at the ratio of free cash produced per unit, it actually beats Pepsi and many of the competitors just because of its scale, its size, and its distribution. And then, of course, it also has that loyalty brand that people, some people just prefer Coke over Pepsi.
Well, I was wondering if Amazon, with, you know, the way it's been able to grow, is developing a durable competitive advantage.
That's a good point, Steve. I think you may be onto something there. Amazon, I prefer shopping on Amazon online, but I did look at their estimated intrinsic value. If you model that traditionally, right now it looks slightly expensive, but then you could be right. If you put a longer tail on your valuation, then you could argue that it's fairly valued.
Okay. So let's go to the next filter. What is that?
Okay, the third filter is able and trustworthy management. And he always has this joke when you listen to Warren. He says, if they're able but not trustworthy, you may end up losing money. Just like those guys that used to run Enron, they were certainly able of doing business and operating the energy part of their company. However, as facts have proven, they weren't very trustworthy.
Right, right. So you have to have both of those combined. Also, these managers, you know, I'm thinking about the companies that Berkshire Hathaway purchases. These managers have plenty of money. They're not really doing it for the money solely anymore. There's got to be this extra drive they are exhibiting. You have any comments on that?
Yes, you're exactly correct. He looks for the passion that they have for their individual businesses, and they do have a drive to build their businesses rationally and not overspend and control the costs.
And then the fourth filter is this idea of buying at the right price. In a sense, I think this is one of the more difficult of the four filters because trying to capture a valuation of a company is very, very difficult. Even Warren Buffett says it's very hard to know how to value a company. Do you do it based on, you know, book value or cash flow, and then you've got to project certain amounts of growth in the upcoming years, which can be very variable. But how do you determine how to pay a price that contains a margin of safety?
You're right again there. The estimation of the intrinsic value per share can be done several ways. The one that I use and the one that Warren has talked about in his writings is the estimation of free cash flow that the company will produce over its lifetime. Now, I don't stretch it out that long, but I use a 15-year model where I try to use a conservative growth rate on the first 10 years, and then I just flatten it out from year 11 to year 15, and then take the sum and discount the sum using the formula called net present value, bring that back to present value, and then divide by the number of shares.
And then you get a price per share. You compare that to the current price per share, and you can tell whether something is overvalued or undervalued based upon its current price.
Right. At least it gets you in the ballpark area.
Exactly.
Warren always says that he and Charlie could sit down and do these numbers and they wouldn't come up with the same figure.
Right.
But as long as you come close, then you know whether you're buying at a bargain or you're overpaying.
So folks, this is what it takes to understand and to successfully invest for the long term in stocks, if you're going to invest in stocks on your own and individual stocks yourself. It's not a question of just trading and trading the good markets and trying to keep away from the bad markets or day trading. It's understanding what you own. It's understanding the value of owning something that's going to be compounding its earnings year after year, building its intrinsic value, and then waiting for the market to come to a price where you've indicated or you've figured out is a price which is a fair price to pay and will offer you a good rate of return. Bud Labatin has been my guest. He is the author of The Four Filters Invention. He also has authored other books, one entitled Moats, The Competitive Advantages of Buffett and Munger. And then finally, on my list here, A Fistful of Valuations. Bud Labatin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve.